Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Guter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 22. It was an incredible match weekend on and off the pitch. Off the pitch, of course, the protests continued to interrupt the football on the pitch as the stuff with all the DFL marketing partnership continues to reign as more clubs now start to open dialogue about reintegrating another vote on this particular matter. Blackstone, of course, dropping out, which was a pretty big win for the fan scenes. Let's say the creativity was ramped up on this match day. We saw, of course, the tennis balls, and whoever's making tennis balls, whether it's Wilson or Head, they must be loving the German market at the moment because they are making lots and lots of money. We saw remote control cars with flares. There was planes, little toy planes. Definitely creativity at the highest. In other news, the Zweite Bundesliga remains Nord. The top four teams in the league are from the north of Germany, and we'll go through those games, funnily enough, in the first few. Schalke were the only side in the bottom five entering the match day to win, and surprisingly, we'll talk about Hannover at the end of Group 1, no team has accumulated more points in the calendar year than Hannover. But to help me discuss all of the action, for the first time, we do have a guest in 2024, and it is great to have Adam Kahn back to discuss the action. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matthew. It's great to be back on. As so often inside the Bundesliga, it doesn't feel like I was on too long ago, but the table seems to have changed a lot since then. So yeah, a lot of excitement in both directions and ready to get into it.
It was an exciting match day, and as you would expect from the best league in the world, you know, we're going to patent that trademark somewhere because I think that's there's some real legitimacy behind it. But let's head to the Ostseestadion. Hansa Rostock hosted Hamburger SV. A lot happened in the week for Hamburg. Of course, Tim Walter was relieved of his duties as head coach. Merlin Poulsen, who has quite an interesting story himself, a Hamburg fan for many, many years, a lot longer than my life, but he gets the opportunity to coach in an interim against a Hansa Rostock side that is very much teetering on the edge of relegation. It was a good start for Hamburg. They opened the scoring through Jean-Luc Dompé, but they were a bit sluggish in the second half, and Juan José Pereira, who hadn't scored since, I think, match day two, got his fourth goal of the campaign. A horrible error from Ransford Yeboah Konigsdorf was picked off by Sven Arad Gudjonsson, and the Icelandic striker got his first goal when he ran around goalkeeper Mattia Rabb and put the ball in the back of the net. Hamburg very much threw the kitchen sink, and they were rewarded just 4 minutes after the concession. Robert Glatzel heading home to get his 15th goal of the campaign, and not only that, he absolutely body-checked the hell out of Damian Rosbach, which was... get him into the AFL, that was brilliant. We loved it. 2-2 your final score, and yeah, I don't know what your impression was, Adam. I mean, it was obviously the turnaround with having the interim manager in the fold for Hamburg, but for mine, they felt a little bit disorganized in certain phases. Defensively, they looked very vulnerable with the pairing of Ambrosius and Guillermo Ramos. And it did seem as if Hansa were able to, when they got the transition game working, they certainly were able to put that Hamburg defense under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, Matthew, I think if there's ever a word to describe Hamburg this season, it would be vulnerable, because it seems like in any match, even when they're playing their best performances going forward, there's always a feeling that they can concede goals. And it was the same thing again this weekend. You know, I thought the first half under Poulsen was actually pretty strong. I thought that Hamburg had the game under control. Dompe, I always feel with Dompe, one of the best stepovers in the second Bundesliga, even in German football altogether, a real trademark Dompe goal. But yeah, I mean, Hamburg, too many individual errors, collective errors, and this team really needs a Sebastian Schönlau to return to full fitness and to really organize that back line. And I think it also does need Daniel Hoyer-Fernandez to return. Because I think especially that second goal, Rob is really not looking good. There's no need for him to go out of his goal. I mean, the ball is at the far left corner of the box and no opportunity to score. And yeah, he really just gives Sven-Göran Gudjonsson a golden opportunity that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting one because he doesn't commit. That's the first cardinal sin when you're coming out for the ball. And he just kind of sort of tries to almost jockey Gudjonsson. Mm-hmm. It's a weird play. And look, the two games that we've seen Matteo Rabb in goal, he has looked like a goalkeeper who has not played a lot of football. And that's a really difficult situation to be put into where they make the goalkeeping change for Hoyer Fernandez, which is often a last resort for a coach that's under a bit of pressure. Maybe we'll change the goalkeeper, we'll change something, but it hasn't really done that. In fact, it's arguably created more issues for Hamburg. And look, we were talking off air about the potential coaching candidates. Lukas Kwasniok was the latest name linked, along with the likes of Felix Magath. Stefan Baumgart's been linked to that job for at least a good couple of months. Who do you think might be mm-hmm. the best solution, at least in the short term, to help Hamburg regain some of their composure? Because it does seem the biggest issues that we've seen throughout the season isn't in the offensive end. They know how to score goals. They know how to get the ball into their attacking half. But defensively, it has been a serious Achilles heel when they haven't been able to find a solution yet.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where you see the Baumgart rumors come into fruition, because, I mean, even in the terrible performances at the end of this season for Köln, at the end of Baumgart's reign, one thing that always remained was a strong defensive outlook, you know, other than, I think, the 6-0 defeat in Leipzig. Köln were strong defensively with the back four and a holding six in front of them. Even with pretty limited personnel, they were strong. So I think that in that sense, you can see Baumgart coming in and steadying the ship. But yeah, I mean, after the reign of Tim Walter and the type of progressive football that they played with position changes, with a really technical midfield of Farai, of Rice, of Laszlo Benes, it's hard to then almost take steps backwards in the appointment of Baumgart, even if you maybe say, okay, it'll raise our defensive fortitude. Is this really the direction we want to go to, yeah, regress all the work that was done under Tim Walter? And that's where I think that other appointments, like, for example, Ruud van Nistelrooy was talked about for a while now, a former HSV legend, you could say, even though he only went there at the end of his career, but a legend nonetheless. He's, of course, in management and could be almost that Xabi Alonso type hire to, yeah, really bring in a progressive play style and bring results on the pitch. But I also like Stefan Kunze, potentially. Yeah, last seen in the Turkey job, of course. Doesn't necessarily have the track record in club football that many necessarily like, but knows how to work with young players with the U21 European Championship title with Germany. And also his tenure in Turkey was far from a disappointment when you looked at it from a large scale. You know, he qualified for the European Championships with absolute ease and was, yeah, very, very unfortunate to then be ousted from the job at a period where just a few results didn't go in his favor.
It will be interesting to see what happens. For Rostock, it was perhaps some optimism in what has been a very difficult season for them. We know their biggest issue has been the inability to score goals throughout the campaign. But look, they showed a pulse against admittedly a bit of a weaker Hamburg defense. In what is going to be a really tight relegation battle, we may have to exclude Osnabrück already. But look, they can take some solace that they can compete against some pretty good sides, and they're road ahead, excluding that mistake in the notes. You know, Fortuna Düsseldorf and Kaiserslautern, two very important games for them heading into the month of March.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that I can't say Rostock is a side who I enjoy watching much in the second Bundesliga, probably even less so now that they've appointed Miroslav Celimbegovic, who is not necessarily a manager renowned for his scintillating football. But like you say, results are all that matter at this stage of the season. And it's good to see someone like Pereira returning to goalscoring form, because it's actually a striker who brings a lot to the table. It's just goals that have been missing in recent weeks. So if he can bring back some cutting edge, if Sarpreet Singh can finally find some of the form which he showed at Regensburg, then maybe we can still see an escape from Hansa outside of that relegation zone, which is extremely tight with Braunschweig and Schalke just a few points away.
Absolutely. They've got Fortuna Düsseldorf away on the upcoming weekend, then it's Kaiserslautern and Eintracht Braunschweig. So two massive games entering the month of March. Hamburg, they've got Elversberg at home. That's a World Feed game. And suddenly, that's a really massive game because Elversberg got the wood on them in the Hinrunde. Then it's Osnabrück at home, who also beat them in the Hinrunde before an away date with Fortuna Düsseldorf on the 8th. So some really interesting fixtures for Hamburg. And in what is becoming a really tight race for the promotion places, they need to obviously find a gear. They are now 4 points adrift of Kiel. Let's talk about the league leader, St. Pauli. They welcomed Eintracht Braunschweig to the Millerntor on Sunday afternoon. This game ended a goal to nil when Dapo Afellay got his fourth goal of the campaign. It was a bit fortuitous, yes, but they all count the same. And a decent-ish enough response to their defeat from the game last week against Magdeburg. Your impressions on St. Pauli, Adam, because we obviously want to see the response. They obviously made things a little bit harder for themselves when Elias Saad got his second yellow card, which means he'll miss the game against Kiel on Friday night. But look, they looked very dangerous from the set plays, and that's where the goal eventually came from. They didn't have it all their own way. I thought Braunschweig gave them a really difficult game, and I think defensively they were a little bit vulnerable, especially with the way Braunschweig set up, and they love to obviously hit it on the counterattack.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think when you look at this match on a larger scale, right, you played a long, long period with 10 men, almost half an hour, and Eintracht Braunschweig, one of probably the most informed sides in the division. So at the end of the day, I think this is a performance that you say is that of a champion, and it's one where in recent years, we didn't see from St. Pauli, even in the years and under Timo Schulz, for example, when the going got tough like this, when performances started to slip, so did results. But under Hützler now, we're seeing that even though performances maybe aren't what they were earlier in the season, the results are still coming in important matches like this one against Braunschweig. And this is a key result to continue their pursuit of the Bundesliga. And as you mentioned, Oladapo Afellay on the score sheet, a player who, yeah, for his quality and what he's capable of, has probably not scored enough, actually, for St. Pauli. But good to see him get amongst the goals again and really reward strong performances this season. And overall, 3 points, that put them even further towards the direction of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive gap now. 7 points to Hamburg in third. A 3-point gap against who they'll be playing, Kiel, on Friday night, which I love a good old-fashioned top-of-the-table battle under the lights. But it's going to be interesting to see how they sort of continue this season. Obviously, they got Jackson Irvine back for this game, which we know how pivotal he is for the way they play. We'll probably see Connor Metcalf on Friday night, as he's the most likely choice. May see Afellay drop to the left. But It does show. I know Dortmund fans won't like this, if there are any Dortmund fans that listen to this podcast, but they really have strong character traits that, it's so easy when you lose and we see teams just enter a funk after being so fantastic for the majority of the season. But as you mentioned, you know, Braunschweig have had a really good time of it under Daniel Schoening. You know, 6 wins from the 10 games, and we know, under Schoening in particular, you can't concede the first goal because it really plays into how he wants them to play, which is to sit deep and use the likes of Philippe and Gomez to really burn the pace. And it was really impressive to see them actually sort of regroup and get it together. I do want to talk to you about Braunschweig because they had their chances in this game to really get a result. I mean, you look at the Helgason miss, the Ivanov miss, which was equally as bad. They gave a really good account of themselves from set plays. They were very dangerous. They had those chances which I mentioned, and to be honest, they'd been a little bit more clinical in front of goal, they might have got a result, and it would have, for mine anyway, might have been difficult to argue that they didn't deserve something, because they have shown that they are definitely a lot more competitive under Daniel Schoening, and his ability to understand sort of the squad build up and how to maximize talent has certainly, you know, in many cases, showcased why they eventually got the coaching hire correct, so far anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I think this squad is very, very different to, or at least the lineups are very, very different to what Eintracht Braunschweig were favoring at the beginning of the season. For example, Anthony Uja on the bench only. You go with Felipe and Gomez, who are much more mobile forwards, who run the channels more, who add a bigger defensive impact, can almost flirt into a false nine role also. And although I think Uja is a big miss still for the side with his goal scoring and clinical nature, especially in a match like this where he mentioned all the big chances missed, Felipe and Gomez are really impactful in how they're able to get the ball forward to really carry possession and provide an outlet also with their driving runs. So yeah, I think Braunschweig is still one of the most competitive sides in this relegation battle, and even this defeat shouldn't dissuade the strong work being done since the appointment of Daniel Scherning.
Absolutely, and they had to play this game without the number one goalkeeper, Ron Torben Hoffmann, who was out with illness, and Tino Casali had a pretty decent Zweite Bundesliga debut, all told. So Braunschweig have welcomed Hertha to the Eintracht Stadion on Saturday, then it's at Nuremberg, and then a home game against Hansa, so some really important games for them. For St. Pauli, of course, that top-of-the-table game against Holstein Kiel at the Holstein Stadion on Friday night, that's the World Feed game. Then at Schalke to start March, and then a home date with Hertha BSC. That is also a World Feed game on the 10th. Now let's talk about a big game that happened on Friday night at the Heinz von Haydn Arena. Hanover and Stefan Leitl welcoming his former side, Greuther Fürth, in what was a really interesting match with massive connotations in terms of the table. And it looked pretty good for Fürth early on when Armindo Siebe continued his excellent run in 2024, scoring his fourth goal in his fourth goal of the calendar year, really showcasing his individual quality and really has grown a lot as the season has progressed under Zorniger. But they were unable to really hold it together in the second half. It was set pieces that undid Fürth. Phil Neumann scoring a header on 61 minutes, and then Nicola Trezoldi, who has really started to pick up the goal scoring output. A poacher's goal, if I've ever seen one. Really, after Harvard Nielsen headed on, Trezoldi was first on the scene to score. And a big win for Hanover. It's four wins on the bounce. It means they currently sit in fourth place, leapfrogging Fürth. They are 1 point off the relegation playoff. No team has accumulated more points this season, this calendar year than Hanover. It's the first time since Matchday 4 to Matchday 7 of last season that they have won four on the bounce. And it was quite interesting how they set the team up, in the sense that how often have you seen Andreas Vogelsammer play right back, given the injuries and sort of the lack of depth that they have at the fullback position? But I suppose we should talk about Fürth, because Fürth still had their opportunities to get a result in this game, and they were made to rue some of their inefficiencies in front of goal, where Hanover were able to get it done.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, I guess, the downsides of having such a young roster and such a young attack around the likes of Tim Lemperle and then Armando Zieb. You have players who are extremely talented, which in no other situation would you normally be able to get. But the downside, of course, with young players is that also the ability to capitalize on each and every chance often goes missing. And we saw that with Armando Zieb, especially. You mentioned the goal, of course, but there's also some big caliber misses, which could have seen Fürth extend that lead in the early stages. But overall, I think Fürth are exactly where they want to be, if not even higher than the expectations were ahead of the season. When you compare it with that really, really poor previous campaign, where for a long spell it looked like relegation was on the cards, and then you look at how many changes they made in the offseason, how many young players joined the squad, it's really been an exceptional season under Alexander Zorniger, and one which can be the backbone of a true promotion push next season.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, if they can find a way to keep Lempele and Ulbig, which I think will be very tough given the situations that Köln are dealing with. But they've been able to find solutions, and I think a lot of that has to do with really good game management. He wasn't particularly popular post game though, after some words that he ha said to Sky. Derek Ray, the legend himself, was able to translate this. What a champion! This is what Zorniger had to say, which was the fan groups right now are playing their own game. They're embarrassing the referees, the DFL, the teams, and no one is intervening. I don't like it when it's said over and over that fans are the heart of the game. The only group without which there is no game, is the players themselves. The fans are the soul of the game, no doubt, but not the heart. And the heart now has acute palpitations, which that was a very strong statement, and he wasn't the only one who articulated the displeasure about the protests and the way that were going. But if we talk about Hanover, this time last season, there was talk that Stefan Leiter was in some serious trouble regarding his tenure in what was his first season at Hanover. And, you know, we've spoken about it throughout the season of how legitimate their promotion push is, and I'm still going to remain on the skeptical side of things, but it's hard to argue that they've got a very strong attacking team. You know, I think they're top three in goals scored this season, and they've found different avenues to goal, whether it's Drizzoldi, whether it's Nielsen. You know, Toikert is getting back to fitness. He played a good portion of their practice game against Hessen Kassel the following day. They got Halstenberg to come back from his red card suspension. So very, very sneakily, they've put themselves in the mix. And like many things, you know, you have to be in it to win it. And starting 2024 in the manner they have put themselves in the conversation, even if still there are some things that can, you know, are little red flags as to some of the issues they could face down the line.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, what I always enjoy, at least about Hannover, or respect about Hannover, is their ability to bounce back from setbacks under Stefan Leiter. Saw a really poor run of form ahead of Christmas, and they've returned with real vengeance in the new year to be the leading side in the Zweite Bundesliga in 2024. And also personnel really, really hits. You see, of course, Amasa Halstenberg, who's been an influential player at center back this season, and of course Niklas Kuhn leaving on deadline day. And since then, they've adapted extremely well with Bright RMB playing a leading role in this kind of new look Hannover side. So I think that Hannover has a lot of the credentials to still be a promotion candidate this season. I like the experience in the squad. I think there's a lot of players who have proven themselves at the Bundesliga level and have also shown quality in the Bundesliga as well. And I also like that, of course, there's still those young talents filtered in throughout, with Nicola Trisoldi chief amongst them.
Yeah, and Leopold as well. I'm a big fan of watching his work. They've got Osnabrück on Saturday. If we remember the game in the Hinrunde, that was a 7-0 victory for Hannover. I don't expect it to be that lopsided, but you never know. Then it's Fortuna Dusseldorf entering March. That's a World Feed game. And then Wien Wiesbaden away. The big game for Fürth this week is the Frankenland derby against Nürnberg on Sunday, then at Karlsruhe, then at home to Elversberg. So an interesting stretch for Die Kleeblatts. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 game, starting with Karlsruhe and Fortuna Düsseldorf. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, Manscaped. 2024 is here in full swing, and that means it's time for a New Year's resolution check-in with our friends at Manscaped. It's never too late to level up your grooming game and keep your bush tamed. Manscaped's new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is every man's cheat code to look good, feel good, and turn the page on confidence this year. Whether you're going for a trim or that clean-shaven look, this trimmer has you covered. Trusted by over 10 million men worldwide, now is your time to get a grip on your grooming with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code 2BundesligaPod for 20% off and free shipping. The ball has dropped, but don't drop the ball on your balls. Let's talk about the biggest two-way threat in world football. That's Manscaped's fifth-generation lawnmower. It's not just a trimmer, it's your grooming sidekick. Equipped with two skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It's like having a personal stylist at your fingertips, or, well, wherever you need it. Did we mention it's waterproof? Because a trimmer in the shower is the only way to start the day. And for the men who want the full grooming experience, look no further than Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0. In this grooming kit, you get the trusted lawnmower, Manscaped's ear and nose hair trimmer, and essential aftercare products with a crop soother, ball aftershave lotion, and crop preserver, anti-chafing ball deodorant. Yes, it's deodorant for your footies. Bet you didn't think you needed that. As a gesture for the new year, they have even thrown in two free gifts, the Boxers 2.0 and the Shed 2.0 toiletry bag, because they know good and well you're still rocking your boxers from high school. Let's face it, resolutions might come and go, but a well-groomed you is here to stay, thanks to Manscaped. Remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code 2BundesligaPod at manscaped.com. Embrace a new you, and definitely embrace a new trimmer, courtesy of Manscaped. Now, back to the podcast.
Two sides who were looking to get back to winning ways on Matchday 22 were Karlsruhe and Fortuna Düsseldorf. These two sides went head-to-head in the top spiel on a Saturday evening. This game can be categorized in two ways, I suppose. It was the Christos Tolis show. It was also the Florian Kastenmeier show, but not for all the right reasons. Tolis scored twice in this game. The first one was a thunderous header from inside the six, and the second goal was some real individual quality to get his 11th goal of the campaign, and he's been one hell of a signing, loan signing for them, and if they were to go up next season, he would be someone high on the list, but I can imagine there'll be several teams who will be thinking the same. The goal scorers were for Karlsruhe, Jerome Gondorf and David Herald, getting his first Zweite Bundesliga goal. He's on loan from Bayern. This game is just, there was the period after halftime where it really kicked off and it was end to end. It was entertaining. The crowd were up and about. But I can't help but feel that this game is unfair, and I feel sorry for Florian because he's been such a staple for Düsseldorf for a long time. But it's not exactly the two goals he'll look back on quite fondly. The first one where he fails to really make a decision of whether he should jump up and intercept or just do something. And the second one, of course, straight through the wickets. A tough night for Kastenmeier. I think probably in the end it's a fair result because I don't think Düsseldorf really did enough to win the game. But obviously the circumstances that pertain the incidents are obviously one of disappointment for Fortuna fans.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of the story of Düsseldorf's season a little bit, where you see the potential for greatness throughout large stretches of matches, but it's just not enough to really bring it over the line often. We must, of course, touch on Solis again. Another really, really exceptional performance from the youngster. You don't always see consistency throughout a lot of his games. There's moments where he goes missing in matches or he's a little bit too zealous in his decision-making. For me, also one of the most one-footed players in the second Bundesliga. But my, oh my, that right foot has a lot of genius in it because Solis is a player who, should be playing at a higher level next season, as with many of these players in the Düsseldorf roster. So I think there is a lot of pressure on Düsseldorf to still somehow make promotion. I think it will be impossible to hold all these elements together again for another year in the second Bundesliga. So Daniel Thun and co. really needed to make that push work in the coming games where they have some really important fixtures.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think anyone would have pictured that they would be winless so far in 2024, with their only win in all competitions being the quarterfinals win in the Pokal. It's been a really sort of difficult situation, and I think it really comes to their defense. They've really dropped off their intensity. It does feel as if they are, I'm not sure if they're short a man in the squad, but definitely feels like they're not as defensively cohesive as they were during the Hinrunde. We are seeing teams, no matter who they are, whether it's been Elversberg, it's been Karlsruhe, teams have been able to really play through them with relative ease. And I think a great sort of indicator was the first goal that they conceded, where, I'm not blaming Tanaka here, but if Tanaka is able to get past Sebastian Jung, they're on the counter. They've got Karlsruhe high and dry. But when he loses possession after what was a super tackle, they looked very disorganized, and it wasn't even like a really dynamic bit of play. It was just Karlsruhe playing the simple balls, getting players out into space. Matanovic puts in a decent enough ball, and Gondorf just wanting it more. I don't want to question the effort, but it did seem as if there was a little bit of lack of energy and urgency early on in the second half, and it wasn't until they conceded that they realised that there was a lot that they had to re-engage, and obviously that led to the Zola second goal.
Yeah, I think between that Gondorf goal, especially between 1.96 meter Joshua Kwasi and goalkeeper Florian Kastenmeier, 1.92 meter, to not win that aerial duel against Jerome Gondorf was pretty questionable, no doubt. Just on Karlsruhe quickly, because I think we should also mention them and the strong performance that they had, and also in general the strong performances they've been having under Christian Eichel recently. Matanovic, another really, really interesting young forward in this second Bundesliga. And I think for me, this has really been the second Bundesliga season of young strikers. You know, you look at Nikola Trissoldi, you look at Matanovic, of course, you look at Can Uzun from Nürnberg. It's really been a season for young breakout strikers. And then Matanovic, even though he didn't get on the score sheet this weekend, was still heavily, heavily involved in both goals and showed another excellent display from, I believe he is on loan from Frankfurt, if I'm not mistaken, and not sold.
You are correct. Yes, he's on loan for the season and someone they'll want to keep going forward, because he's really worked quite well with Budo Zivchevadze. But quite interestingly enough, Zivchevadze was dropped to the bench for this game and Matanovic played a bit more of an isolated nine role. And yeah, even though, as you mentioned, he wasn't able to find the score sheet, you know, he assisted the first goal. He looked quite dynamic. He's very good at a lot of the sort of the unheralded things off the ball. I think he works quite well under Eichner. We saw sort of that mini breakout a few seasons ago at St. Pauli, which, you know, got him the move to Frankfurt, and then not much happened the last couple of seasons, but he really has found his form, and you're right. It's good to see that the young player, we spoke about this off air, about young players that are actually getting the opportunity to play. And, you know, if we were to sort of forward think about things like the Euro, the World Cup for the German national team, it's really important for these younger players to play at a high quality level, get the games into them, so that when the lights are shining brightest, they can actually thrive on the stage. And we're seeing that bear fruit at the moment, especially there's several Zweite Bundesliga players who could make a genuine case to play at the Euro come June and July. Karlsruhe, they've got their derby game, regional derby against Kaiserslautern. That's a massive game for both sides. You know, Karlsruhe can't really afford to lose games, because the you know, they are very close still to the drop. They might be only 7 points, but a few results here and there can change the perception of where they're at. Then they've got Fürth and then Holstein Kiel, Dusseldorf, Hansa Rostock, Hanover away as a World Feed game, then a home to Hamburg SV. Let's talk about Paderborn. Paderborn welcomed Holstein Kiel to the home deluxe arena. 12,000 saw really a tale of two sides. One was unable to take their chances, and the other one who every time they went forward, they looked like they were going to score. 4-0 in the end for Holstein Kiel. It's back-to-back victories for them, which means that they are in a great position, sitting second and 4 points clear of HSV. Goals from Finn Porat, Steven Skripski, who's now got 8 for the season, Marvin Schultz, and then Niklas Niehoff getting his first goal in the Zweite Bundesliga this season. And wow, yeah, what a game this was. I have obviously not done the notes for Kiel, but look, a fantastic performance from Kiel, who really looked comfortable in the transition phases. You know, look, a really good performance, because they struggled out of the gates. They looked a bit cumbersome early on, out from the winter break, but the last two games, a win against Schalke, which they were very much the better team in getting results, and here super efficient going forward. They looked very confident. Obviously they'd love to see some more goals out of their the Japanese striker Shuto Machino, but it shows of the quality that this Kiel team has. They are missing a bunch of their key players, but they very much spread the wealth. It's a next man up mentality. And to have four different goal scorers in a 4-0 win, I'm sure Marcel Rapt would have been rapt with that performance. I'm really sorry, that's bad, but I'm keeping it in there.
Yeah, I think for Kiel, the strength is really the depth in the squad, and especially in attacking positions. As you mentioned, you know, Shuto Machino hasn't scored since the beginning of the season, but it hasn't even been a huge factor, because Kiel have constantly found goals from all over this side, whether it be, of course, Stefan Stripski, who has really, really been in incredible form again this year. Of course, Jan Fiedab, before his injury, was banging in the goals again after many had written him off. And even off the bench, with some young players like Niklas Niehoff coming in and showing some promising signs. So I think that Holstein Kiel don't necessarily have that same allure as the St. Pauli do to really say, okay, they're safe. They're definitely going to make it to the top flight. They don't necessarily have that pure quality throughout the squad. But you can see time and time again how well coached this team is under Marcel Rapp, how it's really a collective approach that is really paving the way towards success. And yeah, Holstein Kiel is just an example of a club which has been slowly developing year for year over the past seasons, constantly getting it right in the transfer market, constantly getting it right in the coaching position. And it's about time that they, in a similar sense to FC Heidenheim, I think, make that way into the Bundesliga.
Yeah, they have been knocking on the door for several seasons under several different managers. It shows, yeah, it's a massive sort of a compliment to the way they run things in Kiel that regardless, well, excluding the Andre Schubert appointment, but we're all allowed a mulligan from time to time. They've typically hit the nail on the head with their coaching hires, and yeah, Marcel Rapp has, after what was a pretty frustrating season for them last season, and you know, a few Kiel fans were very honest in their approach of not really knowing what the identity of the team is. Well, it seems pretty clear now that this team is a natural born winner, and their road form has been mightily impressive. They've won 7 of their 11 games away from home, with an average points per game of 2.09, 20 goals for, and they're actually better defensively away from home. They've only conceded 10 times away from the Holstein Stadion, and that's a good reason as to why, at least for the most part, they are sitting very pretty near the top of the table. Of course, they've got St. Pauli on Friday night, then at Hertha, which is a World Feed game, and then Karlsruhe for them. Paderborn, we'll talk about quickly. Not good. It was quite an interesting selection. That's Kvasnir Arkady had essentially four strikers playing this game, and not all of them were playing as a striker. But they have some real issues. I think the goalkeeping has been a serious problem for them this season. Yannick Hoots was very bad, putting it nicely, throughout his time this season. Now we've got Pelle Boevink, who was not great in this game either. He, without being too overly critical, it looked like any shot that was at him was a real opportunity of going into the back of the nets. And perhaps that's something that we look at going forward, that definitely goalkeeper is a position of need. But I think the defense in general could also use a bit of a workover if possible, because they haven't really been a cohesive unit, and they are very prone to having games where they just completely just ship goals like it's going out of fashion.
Yeah, I think as you mentioned, I think that the defense we saw not just in the back three, but also not having someone like Maximilian Rohr fit enough to start from the beginning was a huge loss. He ended up going into the back three at halftime, but almost as someone who could have worked alongside Christopher Konsombi in the first half, that would have added a big help against a Kiel midfield which often uses a lot of central players in almost a diamond midfield. And really overloads those spaces. You saw someone like Lewis Holtby dropping into that, deep line sixth role, really pulling the strings again for Holstein Kiel in what has been a spectacular resurgence from the former German international. And in general, I think Paderborn, yeah, I mean, this is a match they had to win if they really wanted to make a statement again in the promotion race. It's been a good start to the calendar year, but it's also been a start to the calendar year that they needed to make, given what was such a poor beginning to the season in the, I would say, the Mats Kruse era of Paderborn that everybody would rather forget. And this is a match that end of the day is going to come back to bite them when they see at the end of the season if it's just a few points missing for promotion.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess the one thing we have to consider is cons if you sort of put them in a bowl of teams that typically punch above their weight. Yeah, they typically are, working with a lot less than others. So yeah, I mean, and they lost, as we mentioned throughout the season, they lost a good sp their spine essentially was gutted throughout from last season, and they've looked at the fact that they're sixth. I mean, is a testament to some really good coaching and a very, very good squad management throughout. So let's see if they can get back to winning ways against Wiesbaden. Then it's Magdeburg, and then Schalke away. on Saturday. Let's head to the Olympiastadion. Hertha welcomed Magdeburg. Now, when these two sides played last time, it was 6-4. Absolutely sensational. And that was fun. And this game was, it was a game. It was interesting. It was a strange game. But look, Magdeburg brought the heat. They had over 15,000 made their way to Berlin on a Friday night, and they produced a sensational atmosphere. It was really buzzing, and both managers complimented that, and rightfully so. The game ended 3-2 in the end for Hertha. Barış Atik opened the scoring on 22 minutes, then Fabian Riza won a penalty, which he converted. Then Jean Huguenet was sent off for a challenge on Jonjo Kenny, which we'll talk about in a second. Pauke Dardai scored the preceding free kick. Brilliant. Really good bit of individual quality. And yes, it's one of those weird times where the manager can actually have a smile that his son scored a rocket goal. But it was 2-2 just 6 minutes into the second half when Tobias Müller, who returned to Magdeburg after a season and a half in Paderborn, he had time. And then the game-winning goal was when Tabakovic's effort was saved by Riemann. But Fabian Riza was on hand to score his sixth goal of the campaign. And before we talk about the action, do you reckon Huguenet's sending off was correct? My initial feeling is that Kenny sort of kicks the ball out of reach, and I don't feel as if he's in a position where he's going to win the ball regardless, as if like the ball was going to go into touch. But I suppose, I don't know, I felt the red was harsh. Maybe I'm in the minority on this, but I didn't think it was a red card.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a harsh decision. I think that it's one of those, though, where you would probably say whatever happens on the pitch, you hold. So if it's a yellow card, you wouldn't check it and change it. And if it's a red card, you wouldn't then rescind it. So for me, it's one that still is okay, still doesn't, I wouldn't consider a clear and obvious error on the refereeing part. So I don't want a VAR intervention. But as you mentioned, I think if on the field of play the referee opts for a different decision, then I would also not be completely flabbergasted and demand a replay as a Hertha fan.
That's fair. Big result for Hertha, back-to-back wins. And it's interesting the change in perspective, given that a few weeks ago it was the real nerves of relegation, but now they sit only 6 points away from the promotional playoff spots. And it feels like there's a clear correlation as to why this is the case. And it starts with number 11 in white and blue stripes. But it can't be understated how big Fabian Ruiz has been for them this season. And once again, he put in an unbelievable shift. And he's clearly still not at full fitness because he didn't finish out this game. But he was mesmerizing once again. When they get him in actions where he's isolated one-on-one, or they can just... Essentially, it's almost like... this is going to sound really simplistic, but... It's just kick the ball in a space and let Fabian go to work. It seems to work. I don't know how sustainable it can be, but throughout the season, he's produced some really important performances for them in games where it didn't look like Hertha were really offering a whole lot. And once again, you have to say that he really put Hertha on his back to help them get past a Magdeburg side that, despite going down to 10 men, still looked dangerous in offensive phases.
Yeah, I mean, when talking about Hertha, we could probably spend an entire podcast just speaking about the blunders they have made in the transfer market in recent years. But Fabian Riza has been an absolute coup for them. Remember, he was signed on a pre-contract agreement in January last year when Hertha were still hoping to play in the Bundesliga. And, well, I think Fabian Riza has showed all campaign that he is more than capable of being a Bundesliga player. Absolutely exceptional 1v1 technician. Such a good drive to goal. A real leader also. I mean, like we mentioned, he was signed in the summer. Captained Hertha in the side. Someone who is really just completely, he's really bonded with the Hertha fan base, with Berlin as a city, and also with the project and where it is right now and the goals that they hope to achieve. So yeah, Fabian Riese is really the embodiment of everything good about Hertha right now. And now it's just about turning consistency into the season. Because as you mentioned earlier, Hertha has been the side, you would say, who has been the most topsy-turvy in where this campaign has been going. One week they are back in a relegation battle. The next week they are again looking forwards towards a late push for promotion. So consistency is really the key for Hertha in these remaining few matches of the season. And yeah, to go off on a high note that, you can't ever write them off with Fabian Riese, and it's impossible to say if Hertha are completely away from the promotion places just yet.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, but it's probably it's a testament to how competitive the league is that it's so tight, especially in the mid-table, that one week you could be closer towards promotion and the next week you'd be closer to relegation. For Magdeburg, yeah, look, like many teams who haven't had an answer for Fabian Riese, they obviously let him get away, but they still showed some really good resolve, and they almost snatched an equaliser on the 90 when Tatsuya Ito rattled the woodwork, and ultimately they couldn't find a goal. But you get these performances from Magdeburg. We've seen it over the last year and a half that they've been back in the Zweite Bundesliga. We know their strengths, we know their weaknesses, and it was kind of a case where they really didn't get a flow of the game, and I suppose a lot of that had to do with the stoppages, but they also gave up a ton of really good opportunities, and I know the XG is very heavy against them, but they still offensively could have made more of it. What's been your impression of Magdeburg? Because they were lightning out of the gate to start the season. They went through a lull, and they're kind of a bit up and down at the moment. Where do you think their sort of biggest like necessity comes going forward? Because we know how good they are with the likes of Atik, Amiichi, who didn't have his best game. He's been pretty solid this season. Xhaka, Ito. Where do you think their biggest issues lie, and what do you reckon they can do going forward to sort of progress up the table as the season continues?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned, of course, Fabian Ruiz on the one side, and you also need to mention Baris Atik on the other, because Baris Atik is, I mean, I think those two are the players who carry their side the most in the second Bundesliga. I don't think there are two other players who are that integral to their team's attacking output. And when we speak about then what Magdeburg can do better, it's on the one hand lessening the load for Atik. I looked at Lucas Schüle and Castaños. Luke Castaños is the two number nines. I think neither of them have really shown their full promise. Both work very hard against the ball or are good aerial outlets, but they need to do more in terms of goals and assists. And then, of course, the typical issue with Magdeburg, just the individual errors. Of course, Huguenot with the red card, then also the final goal. Krempicki, Connor Krempicki, a technically really, really impressive player, but just an unforced error in midfield that allowed that third goal for Hertha. So yeah, it's really the typical issues for a Christian Tietz side to find that perfect balance between positive risk in possession and reducing the propensity for cataclysmic defensive errors. And I think that's something that Tietz has still yet to find in his managerial career, and that'll be kind of the key difference to see if he's a manager that's truly made for the top, or if he's someone who, yeah, can only really do it to a certain level.
Absolutely. Let's see if they can find some defensive solutions against Schalke on Saturday night. Then they're at Paderborn following up for Hertha at Braunschweig, then versus Kiel, and then at home to St. Pauli. Those last two games are World Feed games, so it'll be interesting to see how they get on there. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss all of the action from our Group 3 games starting at the Max Morlock Stadion, where Nürnberg hosted Kaiserslautern. If you had Freedom Funkel on your bingo card for this year as to managing a football club, well, you've done pretty well, because on Wednesday of last week, he was announced as the new coach of Kaiserslautern when he took over from Dimitrios Gramotzes. There's two things to discuss really with Funkel. A, he wanted a short-term project. Well, he's got one. And B, he's inherited a team that's in the semi-finals of the DFB Pokal. I mean, that's a pretty good gig. And if he can bring silverware, then obviously he'll be immortalized. But first, he needed to break the funk. One win in 12 games for Kaiserslautern means that they are very much teetering in the relegation battle. They travel to Nuremberg, hoping to turn the tide. Well, it looked good early on when they opened the scoring. Richard Tashi getting his third goal of the campaign and very much set up in a, let's say we want to hit you on the break. They were more than happy to let Nuremberg hold possession. Despite a lot of the ball that Nuremberg had, they didn't really do a whole lot with it, and it was going to take a moment of magic to break the deadlock for them, and they did so on 64 minutes, and it's that man again, Can Yılmaz Uzun, with a sensational goal of real high quality to beat Julian Kral, who himself was having a fantastic game. It's a brilliant goal, his 11th of the campaign, 1-1. And Nuremberg, you know, they were sort of in half-chance territory. Lots of set pieces towards the end of the game, but nothing really concrete. And 1-1 is your final score. And improved, I suppose, would be the best way to describe Kaiserslautern. There was a lot of talk heading into the game, post-game. There was the situation with Philip Clement, who didn't mince his words about the way he was treated under the previous management's. But he was on the bench and made a cameo. But look, we saw some returning players. Kenny Prince-Redondo, who we hadn't seen a lot of recently, he came back in. Lots of action with him in transitional phases. They looked pretty promising on the break. They were more than happy to hit Nuremberg on the Kaiserslautern, but I guess they didn't really get bang for their buck when you only have three shots on target for an output of 20 efforts on goal. That's not exactly the conversion rate that's going to win you many games of football.
Yeah, and I think this, as you mentioned, the Redondo, Ache, and Tashi front three that kind of gave you a sense of the match plan Kaiserslautern were going for, and especially throughout the first half, which was, I mean, very, very long given the stoppage from the fan protests. It worked a treat, actually. I think Redondo was excellent with his driving runs. Tashi as well. For me, one of the most informed players throughout this Remotsis era. I mean, the Remotsis era was not very long, but he was one of the better throughout that spell. And as so often, Radna Ashe with his strong hold-up play, his back-to-goal frame, I think that front three is, yeah, really, really quality and good enough for many, many second Bundesliga sides, let alone one which is battling relegation. But overall, it's dropped points again for Kaiserslautern. A point away from home in Nuremberg is something that perhaps at the beginning of the season you would have taken, but in the current situation, it's just simply not enough. And yeah, time is running out for the turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big moment for them because they've got three massive games against, you know, teams. Well, I mean, Karlsruhe are the exception, but following that, two massive games against sides who are in the relegation battle themselves. And we brought up the stat a few weeks ago about the importance of Ragnar Ache, and obviously having him back in the lineup is quite massive for them. But it's also going to be, in sort of these relegation fights, it's going to be goals by committee. You need more players to really step up. You mentioned Tashi was quite good. Redondo was quite good in this game. And look, they face a massive uphill battle. And I suppose really, you know, the best way to ease the nerves is to win games of football. Their biggest issue has been defensively. They have been torrid all season, 44 goals conceded, and only Osnabrück is worse than them throughout this campaign. But I thought they defended quite well given the circumstances of this game, especially when Nuremberg started to get on top and started to get repeat entries into the box and set pieces coming to the foray. I thought they were quite better. But for Nuremberg, it was a bit of a weird one for them. They've had a few games like this throughout the campaign where you look at the statistics and, you know, they're dominating the ball, and look, they're efficient passing the ball around, but really minimal output to really suggest that they had a good game. Their best chances were the Özcan goal and Sebastian Andersson, who had that late header, which was saved by Julian Kral. And it's kind of an interesting sort of situation they're in because, you know, Andersson, who came in as a free agent in the winter, hasn't scored, but it was his assist that led to the goal. You know, he certainly has proven to be at least as an option, maybe not goal scoring, but in sort of the way they build the foundations up top, at least gives them an option. You know, he's pretty decent aerially, but obviously, I suppose you'd be looking for a bit more goals out of him as the season progresses.
Yeah, I think Sebastian Anderson is a really, really interesting and difficult conundrum in Nuremberg because, I mean, his goal scoring record in the past is at a really exceptional level. Union Berlin, he was kind of the star man in that promotion campaign and also the first season in the Bundesliga. Even at Cologne with alongside Anthony Modeste when they made it to the Europa Conference League, he was a really, really stellar forward who chipped in with some very important goals. But we shouldn't forget he's missed over 18 months of football through a really, really complicated knee injury, which he also had throughout his time at Union. So, yeah, this is a player who, you know, he's only 32, but he probably has the body of a 40-year-old, 42-year-old with the amount of injuries he's had in his career. But as you mentioned, you know, he sets up Uzum's role well. And I think the most important factor that Sebastian brings to the game is his actual ability to kind of occupy center backs and take some of the pressure away and some of the and create some space for that free roaming number 10 legend Uzum. Because we saw in the beginning half of the season, Uzum would often play the center forward position where, you know, he just does not have the physicality yet for it, and he also isn't good with his back to goal. But Sebastian Anderson now frees him up to really play in his prime position as that true number 10. And yeah, now we're seeing the best performances out of the soon-to-be Turkish or German international. Who knows?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting fight. We know there's the international break coming up in the middle of March. And if I was either nation, I'd be looking to cap him as quickly as possible. Both countries, of course, will be at the Euros, Germany hosting. Turkey, of course, qualified quite resoundingly. Let's see how they go against Fürth away. Big game for them, then Braunschweig and Magdeburg. Kaiserslautern have got Karlsruhe, then at Hansa Rostock, and then home to Osnabrück. A team that has obviously under-delivered throughout the season. They came off another defeat. That was Schalke. They welcomed Van Wiesbaden to the Veltins Arena in what was a very, very tight game. One goal separated it, and it was a penalty. Alexander Vukotic fouling Chernov. Not a lot of argument with that one. It was he knew he was just a smidge late, and it was enough to collect the leg of Chulinov. Karaman scores his eighth goal of the campaign, and that was your final score in the end. It was it was one for the purists, that's for sure. It was an interesting watch, but interesting to see the dynamic with Carol Gerrits, because he's favoured throughout his coaching career to play the 3-5-2. Over the last few weeks and months even, they've played a 4-4-2 diamond. He reverts back to the 3-5-2. I don't know. It was a tough game. I feel like Schalke really struggled to break down Wiesbaden. And that defensive three of Kalas, Kaminski, and Baumgart seems still very vulnerable despite the lack of chances that Wiesbaden, or lack of good chances, I should say, that Wiesbaden were able to create.
Yeah, and I think for Schalke, it's really, I mean, I said it so often in this podcast, but especially for Schalke, it's really result business at this point. Performances don't matter anymore. It's just about getting the points on the table because, yeah, that would be a monumental decline to see a club of this stature drop into the third Bundesliga. As for the system issue, I mean, Gerrits, of course, was a manager who, in his time at Union Saint-Gilloise and throughout his spells in Belgium, always played the 3-5-2 with advancing wingbacks. It's kind of his staple that he inherited and used to propel Saint-Gilloise into a prominent state in Belgian football. And I think his early optimism was to come into Schalke and really just put that blueprint into the squad. But as he encountered, as so many Schalke managers have encountered over the past years, yeah, the playing squad is limited in certain ways. And tactical flexibility and being able to simply put in a match plan for a roster who doesn't provide it is something that kind of shot him in the back over those first few weeks. So I think his option to revert to the 4-4-2 diamond was almost to bring a bit of stability as Schalke kind of mastered his system a bit more on the training pitch. And then he rolled it out again now once they had a few weeks to refine it in a crucial game here against Wiesbaden. And yeah, I mean, the 3 points show the quality. I think especially the clean sheet is something that Schalke can build a lot of hope from, because this is a defense that has been ultra shaky all season, riddled with individual errors, riddled with just collective demise and just a lack of confidence, a lack of chemistry. So these are things that Schalke can build upon, even though a penalty goal for a 1-0 victory doesn't necessarily write headlines.
No, you're right. Defensively, they've been apocalyptically bad. But in the situation they're in, where it's very much damage limitation, a win's a win. They're 3 points. It doesn't matter how you get them. They all count the same. They're 3 points. And it gives them, for at least this week anyway, they've got breathing space. They've got the three-point gap to Braunschweig in 15th. But more importantly, they're a game and a bit ahead of 16th and 17th, which is Kaiserslautern and Hansa Rostock. Really important for them. I thought Karaman was quite good. I don't feel like they're getting the best out of Chulinov in that sort of thing. They're playing him as like a striker in a front two. It was quite interesting to see he went with Chulinov and Karaman as the top two. Thought maybe they might have partnered him, you know, whether it would be Karaman with a striker, like an out-and-out striker like a Toronto, who, you know, obviously hasn't really hit any form whatsoever this season. But, just get the results. Al Davis of the old Oakland Raiders used to say, just win, baby, and that's exactly what they've got to do. Let's see if they can do that against Magdeburg. Then they've got that tough Friday night game against St. Pauli and then Paderborn as well. Wiesbaden, look, they had some chances late. Agrafietis, I've definitely said that name wrong, but he had that really good chance late on, and then Lee in stoppage time also could have got a result for Wiesbaden. They've got Paderborn in a tough game, then at Elversberg, and then Hanover as they get into the crux of March. Let's talk about Elversberg quite quickly. They hosted Osnabrück. This game was a 3-1 victory to the host, and they did it in pretty damaging fashion. Manuel Fiel, Hugo van der Mersch, and Paul Varner getting on the score sheet in the space of 10 minutes. Maxwell Jamfi got on the score sheet moments after the second half, but really tame performance for Osnabrück. And really, Uwe Koschnat's side really lost it in the first half. They were absolutely just dominated. And a player who was the driving force for Elversberg to win this game was Yannick Rockholtz, who had 2 assists. And I suppose if we were talking NBA assists, his effort that hit the crossbar found Paul Varner. But yeah, Rockhelt was really the driving force of the creativity, and a good reason as to why Elversberg moved back into the top half of the table.
Yeah, I think anybody who watched the third division last season will already know the quality that Yannick Rochel can bring onto the pitch. You know, he's not the fastest player as a winger. He's not the most physical by any means, but he's got so much technical elegance on the ball, so much creative passing ability. And he's been a real, real mastermind in Elversberg's 2 promotions over the last seasons. He hasn't always been able to show with consistency in the second Bundesliga, but matches like today show his really supreme quality. And I think that he's going to be a player who Elversberg can continue to rely on next season. And I mean, at 25, I still see him being capable of making another step or two in his career. So definitely a player for some German football fans to continue to follow in the coming seasons. And for Elversberg, these were really, really massive points. You know, they've now taken 7 points from the last 3 games. Key victories against fellow relegation fighters in Kaiserslautern and Osnabrück. I don't think they're home yet and then over the stretch, but after a really, really poor slide down the table, to see kind of the results come back again, and to see the results come back also without firing a manager like or Stefan, who was the mastermind behind these promotions, is a great sign. And it's good to see kind of Elversberg finding their way again with all the same people in place.
Yeah, I mean, It's kind of interesting because we've seen a lot of the big clubs, you know, a lot of the clubs fire, you know, have the fire sale. If you look at, you know, from 13th down to 18th, or sorry, 14th, the bottom five have all changed managers at some stage this season. And I think Elversberg really aren't in a situation where they need to. You know, they really trust what Horst Steffen has built. And there is a, I suppose there's a bit of a remnant of like Ralf Rangnick at Hoffenheim, or what he built over time through there. And you know, we are seeing clubs trust it more. You know, Freiburg have done it with Christian Streich when they were relegated to the Zweite Bundesliga back in 2015, won the league, and then since then it's been up and up. Heidenheim with Frank Schmidt and not really panicking on, you know, oh well, maybe we need to do something different. Trusting the process, and Steffen has clearly shown at this level he's more than capable of providing, you know, game plans against some very good teams. And you know, look, they're fun to watch. They've got some really entertaining players who, you know, a lot of them don't have experience at this level. And they've taken it to the league like a duck to water. So, yeah, I agree with you. They're obviously not home and host. I would say like 40 points is typically the ultimate safety. But given how the points have been this season, I think that's a pretty fair number to get to. And so I reckon if they get 8 more points, they should be safe. But yeah, anything can happen in the Zweite Bundesliga. That's it for us. Thank you for joining us to look back at what was a very entertaining match day 22. Adam, thank you so much for coming on. Where can our listeners find you and your fantastic work?
Yeah, I think the best place is just to go on Twitter. You can find me at @xxadamkahnxx. And yeah, just talking about German football always for the Bundesliga fans as well. There's some stuff there, but I think also a lot of second Bundesliga stuff, especially this season. The Bundesliga has frustrated me for a lot of the campaign, a lot of boring teams, I think, this year. But the second Bundesliga has been exciting as ever. So, yeah, you can find me there.
Absolutely. We can definitely say that the Zweite Bundesliga is never boring, and we'll all manifest Tim Walter to Bayern Munich at some stage. But that will do for us. We'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from Match Day 23. We hope you have a fantastic weekend, enjoying all the fantastic football that is on offer, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.